Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I am Henry Picavet.
Welcome to the show for the first time, Henry.
First time.
Another little crossover with the Control-T podcast.
Are you sure it's not a baby crossover?
Baby, mini crossover, I don't know. We can call it whatever you like.
It's a minimum level crossover. Let's be really specific about it.
Lazy crossover.
Y'all need guests, and here I am to talk about some stuff.
Okay, well, don't make us sound desperate. We don't need guests, okay? Anthony and I do great on our own. The conversation just tends to stagnate because we know each other so well.
We like to open it up to new perspectives.
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel honored and privileged to be a guest on your show.
We're super excited to have
you.
So
thank you for the invite. Thank you.
Genuinely. Okay, so what's on the docket today, Anthony? Let's kick these things off.
So we're going to, as we normally do, do a quick rundown of some recent streaming news. We're also going to review the second season of Queer Eye on Netflix. But before that, we're kind of testing out, working the kinks out on this little hazing ritual we now do on the show, which is basically figuring out what are some of the gaps in the sort of cultural movie and TV knowledge of our guests. So, Henry, it sounds like you're ready for this. What are some things that you like feel like you should have seen?
What did you never see?
So, most recently, I've never seen The Walking Dead.
Oh.
I've only seen one episode of The Walking Dead.
Yo, we're all together. I've seen the most Walking Dead of anyone, and I've only seen like 6 episodes. And I have a lot of people in my life that are mad at me for that.
I want to see it because of how everybody feels about it, but I can't with the zombies. I remember
why are you anti-zombie?
I remember when Thriller came out. Neither of you were alive when Thriller came out, but I was. Okay. And that video scared the living shit out of me.
I'm double checking. I'm pretty sure that we were both alive when Thriller came out.
You definitely were not, Jordan. I might not have been either.
Oh, I wasn't. 5 years pre-me. 1983. Came out on my mom's birthday.
Nice.
Okay, so tell us about Thriller.
Oh, it just scared me.
Oh, it scared you. Thriller did.
The video. And there's those obviously pre like good makeup zombies, but still. So I have a zombie thing. I just don't want to watch like dead people walking around.
I don't think Walking Dead is all that scary though.
And it's literally the name of the show.
But like, so have you seen like Night of the Living Dead?
Hell no. Uh-uh. And of course not.
No, so basically no zombies.
No, I love horror movies, but more on the psychological horror stuff. Like I like ghosts, but I don't like zombies. So Night of the Living Dead,
Are you going to see that new Hereditary movie, Henry?
I do want to see that.
Yeah, that looks pretty good.
I do.
I really
want to
see A Quiet Place. That's the one I haven't seen that's on my list. Yeah.
I have to see it back. So,
So here's what I think about Walking Dead. Walking Dead is like, it would be easier to tackle the series if they didn't keep making it. You know,
yes.
Like, it's just like, there's like, how many seasons are there of Walking Dead now? Like, it's
8?
Such a commitment. Yeah.
Oh, and remember that here's the thing about the pop cultural reach of that show is Negan. That's that character's name. Well, none of us watched the show, but I think that was his name.
Yeah.
And I can't remember his real life name, but he was also in Supernatural, which I love. And he's the one who came on the show with that bat with the nails out. Coming out of the bat, and he just like killed everybody who was already dead, but he killed everybody. But I just was watching the reactions of all the people who love Walking Dead on Twitter that night, and they were all like freaking out. It was kind of like the what was that episode of Game of Thrones?
The Red Wedding.
The Red Wedding. I do watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we do. That's a requirement for this podcast.
I watched it all in 1 month.
What? So.
Yeah.
You need to talk to Megan because actually I like lied about it being a requirement because I don't think Megan's seen it. And she's like, I don't care about like fantasy medieval stuff or whatever, like dragons, bullshit.
I'm the same way. But
it's a valuable show regardless.
It's a good show.
Okay, what else have you never seen, Henry? One more.
You know that Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Oh my God.
That everybody loves.
Of course they love it. It's fantastic.
Not one episode.
Not even one. Can I recommend you one?
Sure.
The one to start on. It's I gotta make sure I get the name right because what I think it is might be wrong, Dennis, and D, go on welfare. That's the one.
Okay.
Dennis and D go on welfare. It's in the first season. It's the third episode of the second season, and it could be one of the funniest episodes, I think.
I might think about giving it a try. And one more, there's this movie. I don't even know the name of the movie. I forgot. Everybody's seen it though. It's Mandy Patinkin is in it, and it's from back. It's from like 20 years ago or something.
Mandy Patinkin. That really narrows it down. Thanks.
I know. 20 years ago. I can't remember the name of it though. I should have.
Give us some prepared, additional. But I wouldn't
even.
Here.
I don't know. I think there's things that fly through the air, and there's this little guy in it.
Oh wait, you're thinking of The Princess Bride?
Yeah.
Oh.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's a really good movie, and you should see it.
So that's my list. I'm sure there's, The Americans. I mean, I could go on. I haven't seen The Americans.
The Americans is supposedly pretty good. I watched like 3 or 4 episodes.
So basically the things that I have not seen, you all basically have not seen either.
Well, I saw Princess Brides, and I definitely am very committed to It's Always Sunny. I saw like 7 episodes of The Walking Dead. The problem with The Walking Dead is Maria's brother loves The Walking Dead, and when he comes over, he'll watch it with me, but Maria won't watch it. And she's like, you know, never not here. So there are a lot of scary things that I can't get around to because she refuses. Yeah, it's a big blockage on my streaming rights. Anyway, let's move on to the news. AT&T bought Time Warner, I guess is the headline there.
That's the big one.
Got approved by the government. Actually, by a district court judge. I think people have been saying they're going to try to appeal it, but the judge explicitly was like, don't be stupid and appeal it. I don't know, man. It's in my opinion, and we have to mention that we are owned by Verizon. So mm-hmm. Disclosure there, we are owned by Verizon. So
take that as you will. Verizon.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think it's bad news, man. I think it's bad news in a mix of more bad news with net neutrality. Like, net neutrality would make this a little bit less concerning if it hadn't been rolled back. But, yeah. I think there's two sides to the story, too, right? Because, like, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, all of them are, like, diving into video so much that, like, it's actually made it easier for these incumbents to make their arguments in court about consolidation to deal with competition. So it's like, I don't know. It's confusing and complicated landscape for sure.
Well, yeah. And then Comcast just did something this week too.
Right. So they bid for Fox, which apparently I think they'd made the bid before and actually had bid more money. So right now what's happening is they're sort of taking Fox and splitting it up. And basically the most valuable stuff, which is the movie and TV stuff, was going to be acquired by Disney. And apparently Comcast had made a bid which was higher than Disney's, but Fox felt like this might not get regulatory approval. And so that's why they went with Disney. And so now that AT&T Time Warner looks like it's going to go through, that also means Comcast is like, hey, we're still here. We want to pay 20% more than Disney was offering. It's $65 billion. And so suddenly this thing that had seemed not necessarily like a done deal, but like it was very likely to happen, seems like it's up in the air again.
To the chagrin of Disney. Yeah, that's yes. Not, that's a lot of money. And this is a lot of consolidation and is trying to happen this week.
I think Disney's a little take it or leave it, kind of. Like, we don't know. Like, the tactics of this stuff are, like, so far beyond, like, what is obvious. You know what I mean? Like, it could have been a poke at Comcast to bait them in. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not saying 100% that's what it was. But, like, I have this feeling that Disney's, like, neither here nor there. Like, we'll buy Fox or Comcast can buy Fox, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? But, like, let's make some moves here. But I could be wrong about that. That might be just me trying to make this stuff more fun than it is.
I will say that one thing that kind of bums me out is that it seemed like, I mean, that certainly this idea of media consolidation is not new. There seem to be these sort of waves that happen. But for a while, what was happening was these, you know, journalistic and news publications would get swallowed up in these larger media companies. And I think that definitely had some downsides, and you'd hear things about sort of conflicts of interest and synergy and things like that, and people who weren't necessarily journalists making decisions. But what it also seemed to do was it in some ways sheltered some of these news organizations from like the reality that news is not a good business to be in. And so like, the Time magazine empire could like continue to operate as part of this larger organization. But now it seems like that's the one thing the media companies don't want to do anymore is they're like, we don't need to be in the journalism business. We're going to spin out all of our, journalistic assets, and they're going to sort of sit on their own where they tend not to do very well. Wall Street tends not to be very excited about them. And we're just going to like focus and do this crazy consolidation with everything else except for like the news side.
Well, and like the biggest concern, right, to me, and I don't know how this news plays into it necessarily, but like right now ISPs have this like oligopoly stranglehold, and they like purposefully go after separate territory so that when you don't get the service you need or you get treated unfairly or overcharged or anything like that, like the customer has no leverage. They have no, like, I can't do anything but like bend to the will of Time Warner right now. You know what I mean? Like, or Spectrum, I guess. Like, that is my option. And I can't say, like, well, I'm going to leave and quit. I can't do that. I can't be without internet. So, like, that's the one piece. And then the other piece is, like, at a certain level, consolidation can help the consumer, right? Because it can bring down prices, et cetera. But with the way that cable works right now, like, unbundling is in our favor, at least in the long term. In the short term, it might take prices up, right? But in the long term, it would help. And this is just going in the other direction, essentially. So, okay, that's enough.
I have nothing more to say about that.
Enough of the business news. What else do we have on the old docket?
So the other piece of news is about Netflix, so there was this story in Tech Radar this week, which basically said that Netflix is getting into gaming because it's working with Telltale Games, which has done a number of these like really cool story games. They actually did a Game of Thrones game. They did a Walking Dead game, which I think are all like really good, although like kind of dark and depressing. And after a while, maybe not, a little less fun because they're so depressing. But so they also did a Minecraft game, Minecraft Story Mode. And apparently that's going to be coming to Netflix. And this is framed as Netflix is starting to do gaming, which Netflix then came out and said, no, we're not doing gaming. This isn't a game. It's an interactive story. And apparently there have been other things on Netflix that have had some element of interactivity, mostly kids stuff, which I assume is why I've never heard of it, like Stretch Armstrong the Breakout and some other things. But they're like, we're going to have some interactive content, but we're not doing games. But it does feel to me like a very different experience on Netflix than the one I'm used to. So it seems like even though Netflix doesn't admit it, they are starting to like branch out from like what we would think of as TV.
Well, what's the reason that they would make a deal like this? Because you go to Netflix to watch things, you go to an Xbox or PlayStation to play things.
So Netflix is, I think that the strategy here is they're using brands, like kids television is super important to them. And I think they're using the brands that kids recognize to draw them in. I don't know why make it interactive. I really don't, other than like holding attention of younger people. Mm. But I don't think Netflix is going to go into like what we think of as traditional games. I think they might like innovate on the end of like keeping the attention of young people, mm-hmm. But I don't think that they're going to go up against like console games or even like Switch games. I think it's really just like if a kid has to choose between playing an app on his phone or his iPad or whatever, or watching Netflix and doing something like that, they're trying to make that bridge as accessible as possible and make it as sticky as possible.
I think it also speaks to what I don't have any kids of my own, but I have the sense that for a lot of younger people, that those distinctions that maybe seemed like more significant in the past between like a movie, a TV show, a game, that's also starting to get blurred. And so it's like, hey, we want you to have video content, which can be of varying lengths. And sure, why not? We can introduce some interactivity because kids like interactivity. So I think Netflix is trying to say, like you were saying, Jordan, we're not trying to like get serious about game development. We're not going to be spending millions of dollars trying to create, you know, titles that can compete with Halo. But we'll like we are going to try to experiment a little bit with formats.
And those choose your own adventure games are great. I mean, going back to the books when I was a kid, I loved those things. And so, yeah, if we're trying to bridge certain gaps, I guess, and I don't know that you want to keep a kid in front of a television like that either, but it would be interesting to see. And then like, how do you choose, what buttons are you pushing to choose these movements in the game, in the interactivity? It's another question I have. So I don't know.
I wonder if that will end up working better on like an iPad or a laptop than it would on a TV. But I haven't tried any of this out myself, so I know. Like I've played Telltale games, and definitely you need a pretty good. Even though like there's a lot of like just watching and letting the story unfold, you still need a good controller for that. So I'm curious how that's gonna play out.
All right. Any more news?
That is it. I think we are ready to move on to our review of Queer Eye. And normally when we talk about reality TV, I don't think I need to say this, but I think there is like one episode that does have a little bit of a plot and a little bit of suspense. So I would say that like, if you're worried about spoilers, we will try to keep this spoiler free.
Yeah, I guess we could try.
Which episode is that?
Oh, I was thinking of, there's an episode about this guy who's thinking about moving to Reno.
Oh yeah, you guys that got that one. Far.
And so there's like
I didn't watch that.
Yeah, it's a good one, and like that one, you're actually in suspense about whether or not he's gonna move to Reno because everyone else is like, "Don't move to Reno." So we won't reveal that. Everything else, I think, is fair game because I don't think there are any other surprises.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I think that's fair. Initial thoughts: Netflix is brilliant for putting a rush order on this. I think it's like probably one of the most like feel good shows on television right now. And after season one, people are so hungry for it. And I think it's smart that they just like, yep, let's just do another one, pump it out, you know? So good on them for moving their feet on this one. I've watched 5 episodes and it's just as touching and sweet and hilarious and fun as the first season, in my opinion.
And Henry, you hadn't seen any of the show, right?
I didn't see the first season, but I watched it, the original one, back in 2003.
Oh, okay.
And did you watch all those?
I did not.
I saw them, you know, like I saw them on TV, but I wasn't like, oh, it's Queer Eye Night, you know? I just like, I definitely have seen many of them, but.
So I pretty much watched them all. And I loved it. They do a lot less of what they did back then now, if I recall. And I still remember those guys' faces, too. But so I did not see this season, the first season of this one. And I was like, oh, it's just the same show. So, you know, you asked me to be on the show, and I watched a few of them yesterday. And the first one I watched was season 2, episode 1. And I was like, I was a little tired, but I was like, okay, this is sweet. But they weren't doing much. So I was like, what's going on with this reboot of this show? But then I watched another episode 5, I think. And I was like, okay, so they are doing some of the grooming still, that kind of thing. And but my favorite episode is, I don't know if you watched it, it's the one with Leo.
Yeah.
He's the bartender. I haven't finished it, but I was like this is my favorite. That guy is so sweet. And the things that they do. So these are my original initial thoughts. Like it's definitely got the waterworks going. And it's just, it reminds me that I'm like, I was recently told that I'm a bachelor and my apartment looks like it. And I'm like, come on, I've got a couch, I've got a television, but that's not enough. And so, seeing a show like this, it just reminds, I think there are a lot of us out there. But it is very sweet, and I like the way that they get to the psychology of these people without hitting them over the head with the psychology.
Yeah.
Because that really is a lot of what goes on in our lives, right? We do exhibit on the outside how we feel on the inside. So I think that's really important that they touch on that piece. Because people don't think they're worth cooking for, they're not going to cook for themselves. If people don't think they're worth looking good, then they're not going to do that.
Yeah, I like that about it. I think like one of the things that's sometimes I'm I enjoy, but then when I step back, I'm a little bit skeptical about is this idea of like, we're going to talk through like all your problems as a person in like just a few days. And I think, but I think the show actually also does a good job of like not trying to make it out to be bigger than it is. Like that it's, yes, we had one conversation about this. I'm starting to think about this more, and it's about, you know, raising this and making you aware of these issues that maybe you have a fear of this, of certain kinds of rejection, or that you're not thinking about this side of yourself enough. And so obviously in the context of an episode, which is all about this dramatic change, that can seem bigger. But I think they also are careful to say this, that this only matters if you sort of keep this going into the rest of your life. And we don't know if that's going to happen.
Exactly. And also the screening process for the people on the show must include some of that. It's like, you never know, but are we going to be able to reach you in a couple of days? Because you can be going through it for a while and then have a conversation with some friends over the course of a couple of days, and maybe those friends will be able to have an impact, but maybe they won't. So I'm sure the people how these people were screened, at some point they must have figured out, okay, we can actually probably try to reach you throughout the course of the show.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what the process was like, especially for the first one, because there wasn't a whole lot of publicity around Queer Eye coming back. Like, what did that all look like, you know, and nominating someone, et cetera. Right. Wow.
Et cetera.
I was thinking of the word nominator, like, really hard in my head when I said that.
Et cetera.
Good Lord. But yeah, like, I would be interested to know, because we touched on this the last time we talked about Queer Eye when we did season one, like the difference between this and the original. And like, part of what you haven't seen, Henry, is like in the very first episode of the first season, they talk a lot about the original series and how, like, you know, it was at a different time, obviously, with regards to social progress, and like, mm-hmm. It was so much more about tolerance. And a lot of the times, like, the people who are on the show who were chosen to be, like, you know, fabulous-ized, plus, like, viewers were, like, coming at it more from a standpoint of tolerance and, like, entertainment. And this is, like, really about, like, seeing the heart of it, you know? And, like, it's really a lot more about acceptance. So I'm, like, curious to hear, like, you know, as someone who really loved the original, like, how different this feels to you.
Well, I think that's why I said that I definitely could immediately tell the differences between them. And I think that's when, like I said, at the first one, they were just, I just want to use the word grooming, and maybe teaching them how to cut carrots, and teaching them that.
It was nice, very methodical. Yeah. It was like surface
level. It's nice to have a nice set of wine glasses, and this is the glasses that you put the red in. So, and I also remember when you were just talking, Jordan, I couldn't tell you the season, I couldn't tell you the episode, but I remember feeling a couple of times that the people who were on the show were kind of like standoffish.
Yeah, like afraid skeptical. Or like, you know,
don't fucking,
like,
touch me.
Nervous.
Don't fucking hug me. Yeah, don't touch me. Yeah.
Like, I'm not gay. Imagine.
Gay. Yeah. Exactly. So there was a lot of that. And so this one, there is a warmth to it. But I mean, 2003 for that to come out, I can't believe it's 2018, but 2003, I know it's a long time ago, but it also isn't that long of a time ago. So it's interesting to think that there was still an issue with acceptance and tolerance back then. But yeah. But it was on for four seasons.
Yeah. Well, and like, what's cool, I think, when we talk about like the difference between season one and season two, and Anthony, like, chime in if you think that I'm off on this. But I think part of what was so amazing, from season one, and what like touched people's hearts so much, was they were doing this whole thing in Georgia. They had, you know, like this old white cop guy. They had this like 65-year-old dude who lived in the middle of nowhere, Georgia. And it like really challenged your preconceptions about those people more so than the Fab Five. And watching them have so much love for these five gay guys coming into their home, telling them how to live better, like, was so touching. And this one, I feel like it's more about, like, or at least a few episodes in particular are really around like the Fab Five learning something almost. And like, not so much watching how powerful it is for these guys to accept the Fab Five, but watching like the Fab Five figure out these other worlds and other lives and accept themselves and like, you know what I mean? Like it's a nice level of progress, I feel like, for a show that could potentially become stagnant. Like how many times can you see an old guy like live his best life and love these five gay guys? Like that will eventually like be numb to us, you know, if we overabsorb it. So like seeing that they're progressing, what can happen in these relationships is interesting to me, you know?
Yeah, I agree that I think that there was a little bit of that in the first season, that episode with the cop, where I think there's this conversation that this white cop has with Karamo. And it's both about Karamo saying, as, you know, a black man, this is why, like, you, like, you know, making jokes about, like, pulling me over and stuff, not funny, not okay. But then also the cop saying, like, this is, you know, my point of view. And again, it's not, like, a particularly deep conversation, but it's, like, just them acknowledging the two different points of view. And that felt like a bigger, like you were saying, Jordan, like, a bigger part of this season. And I really like that. I think another thing they did to change it up is I think there's just a little bit less adherence to like a specific formula in these episodes. It's not a dramatic change, but I think in some of the first season, it felt, could sometimes feel like, okay, now we're going to show this person. Now we're, you know, this member of the Fab Five. Now we're going to show this member of the Fab Five. And now it feels like some episodes, they're really willing to be like, this is going to be Bobby's episode where he talks about his relationship with the church. And that's going to, the other members are going to be in there, but it's really going to be about him. Or, you know, in this episode, it's really going to be about, like, Tan learning about, you know, more details about, you know, the trans experience and then, like, how that also relates to his own experience with the gay community. And then, like, not necessarily forcing somebody to have a big role in an episode if it doesn't make sense for them. And so that also, like, I think really helps mix things up.
Yeah. And I don't remember if you mentioned the Tammy thing, but, like, watching Bobby kind of deal with his own demons around being in a church and... like all of that I think is an interesting progression for the show. I also have to say, like, Karamo's place in the show I think is probably the most difficult one, because the rest of them have these very like clear cut tasks, right? Like fix up the house, fix up the hair in the face, get him new clothes, teach him how to cook something, right? Like they're all very well defined and like kind of easy to figure out. Whereas Karamo's kind of job as this like spiritual wellness coach is like very difficult to pull off and feel genuine, and I think he does a really good job with it, like being insightful enough to kind of figure out what this person is struggling with on the inside and not have it come out really feeling really scripted and fake on these episodes is like a really difficult thing to do. And you wouldn't think that like this dude from like Real World 20 years ago would be the one to be that position, right? But like he nails it. He's so sensitive and good at it. Yeah, and I was just gonna say his edges are amazing, like his grooming on his face and his hair. Like I've never, every time he's on camera I'm like, holy shit man, that is precise.
I have like a beard goals for sure. So obviously I saw the first episode and then I hadn't seen these guys before, and I was like, I'm not gonna like any of them. They're all bothering me right now. But it only took me to the next episode and to just really like all of them for who they are and what they do. And there's this sensitivity that comes through that I feel from all of them that helps obviously in what they're doing, because it's going to help people who sometimes don't feel like they need help with whatever it is. And the Fab Five are coming at the guests and they're just kind of like this, with the sensitivity, which I think is the most salient aspect if you're trying to do this, do work like this.
Yeah. And not to be like judgmental, I think it's really easy to like Jonathan, Tan, and Karamo. Like it's just really easy. Like they're likable, funny, charismatic people. I think Bobby and Anthony have a little bit more trouble with that. And I feel like this is their season in a lot of ways.
Interesting. See, I like Anthony a lot.
Yeah. See, I feel like Anthony, like, it's probably like a personal thing for me. Like it's just his, like is the way of going about things. Like he feels super type A to me and it's just like chill a little bit. But when in the first episode of this season, when they go and help fix up the church And Tammy is looking at all of them and saying, like, you are exactly who you were meant to be. Like, you're God's children, you know, for, you know, subscribing to that way of thinking, regardless, like the way it touched Anthony to hear someone say that, like, I was like, okay, well, now I'm on Team Anthony. You know, like, that's all it took, just showing a little bit of vulnerability out of him. And same with Bobby, you know, like, I feel like they're just a little bit harder shells, I guess, is a way to put it. They're, like, harder to get to the soft candy center of.
The religion conversation turned me off in the first episode, and I think that's why I wasn't a huge fan of it. But I guess, I mean, that's what they're doing, because they did not go personal, if I recall, from the first edition of this show back in, whatever, 20 years ago. So hearing the personal stories of these guys is interesting, but I also
don't care for it.
I don't know. I'm totally being a dick probably, but just like, I know that they're trying to, Tammy's son, that was a really sweet aspect of that story.
Yeah.
And so Bobby having a conversation with him about, was it Bobby and Karamo both did? Had a conversation with him about coming out and stuff like that. And obviously the Karamo conversation with him was really sweet. But yeah, that was like, we got a twofer in that first episode. But yeah, it's just hearing their personal stories. But the religion thing and being in church. And if church doesn't accept you.
Well, I think it's like one story to many stories. I think they do a really good job of that. Like in the first season, there was an episode with a young guy, their like main person or whatever that they were fixing up, their client was this gay guy in Atlanta who was like living like a slob and didn't know how to come out to his parents, right? And that's like the plot line. There was the guy who wanted to get the girl, you know, there was the cop, right, who had the really interesting conversation with Karamo around like, you know, police use of violence and force and stuff like that and how it's perceived on both sides and like having an open dialogue about it. So I feel like that was just this one story. And I think for a lot of people, for me particularly, like I was raised in a Southern Baptist household, went to private Christian school my whole life. And that really resonates with me, you know, like my beliefs aside, the feeling of like being in this community that is supposed to be centered around love and then feeling rejected from it is something like I completely relate to. And seeing someone overcome that and figure it out, you know, is a really powerful thing. And watching, you know, a Christian parent, my parents are Christian and they love me so much. And I'm so lucky that they accepted me when I came out, you know, and seeing someone else kind of go through that, it pulls on your heartstrings a little bit because you feel it, you know?
Well, in watching Tammy, hearing the story of how Tammy kind of didn't accept him at first, that was, they had to set that up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really sweet. Do you want to talk specifically about some of these episodes?
Sure.
You know, obviously I didn't watch the first season, but, and obviously they changed the name of the show. So it's not just straight guys.
Yep.
Who did they do last season? It was just a gay guy and then the rest of them were...
Yeah, for the most part, right? Yeah, they were straight guys and they were like all walks of life straight guys.
Okay, so this season we had a woman, Tammy, and then a trans guy.
Right, and as I understand it, it was the first woman, it's the first trans man for this iteration of the show, but I think that apparently there was one trans guy in the earlier show.
Interesting. Yeah, so they're branching out a little bit, I guess. But I think that's the idea, right? Because it's not like, one, these guys are not, to make it a remake, I think they had to choose gay guys, you know, and whatever, like stereotypes of gay guys being more well-groomed or more fashionable or whatever it might be, right? But the casting is smart because being gay is not what makes these men necessarily useful. You know what I mean? And what they're doing, like they're actually skilled at each of the things that they're doing. But the acceptance part, right? Like that is the theme there. Like gays learning to accept themselves, other people learning to accept gays, and then other people learning to accept themselves for who they are, right? And like owning that and loving that and showing it to the world. And so I think that is like the kind of theme, and it doesn't matter who the other person is, you know, or what they struggle with. And I like that. I like that they've kind of made it less about like, let's set up this bachelor to look and feel better about himself. And it's like, let's make sure everyone feels that way, you know?
Well, yeah, especially because we were bombarded with messages day after day after day about we're not good enough, we're not clean enough, we're not smart enough, and all of those things. And like the did you see the episode? I don't know what number it is. It was the dude with the beard who said he graduated from college. Did you watch that?
Which one? The guy with the beard who graduated from college.
He had a beard. He said he graduated from college, but it turns out he didn't, and he was like chewing on sunflower seeds at the beginning in gaming. So I just clicked around, and that's a really good episode. That's a really sweet episode.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
Okay, it's a good one. And he just he doesn't think highly of himself at all to such an extent that he can't stop lying
right
to these guys. And wow, to watch that whole process was really interesting. And they're like, Bobby was like, our bullshit meter is going off right now. Cause he just kept, and then he would deny that he lied. It's like, what are you guys talking about? I didn't lie about that.
Oh,
so they did
God.
A lie detector test on him.
Holy shit. Oh my God. I can't believe I didn't see this episode yet. I'm so excited.
It's really sweet. And, I want to tell you what Karamo did with the results, but I'm not going to. But that was really sweet too, and that was kind of the moment when I'm like, oh, that's what he's here for, and he can have an impact on these people.
Yeah, I feel like Karamo's usefulness is like hard to detect until you like really recognize it, and then you're like, oh man, you know, like the same one is true for Skylar, the trans guy. You know, you think like, okay, going to get, I guess like for myself even, right? Like you can be numb to it. And that's what Karamo said. Like you take your ID, your driver's license for granted, you know? But like it is your one thing that you have in your pocket at any given moment that like kind of tells people the snapshot of who you are. And to not have who you are represented on it, you know, just must be so frustrating constantly. And watching Karamo go through that and seeing him genuinely, one, be nervous whether or not it would work out, and two, celebrating that with Skylar was just like, you know, you feel that, and you feel that that Skylar needed that, you know, needed someone to be with him and say like, we're gonna do this together. I'm gonna stand right by your side, and I'm gonna be there to give you a hug when it all goes through. You know, it was just a really cool thing.
Yeah, and hear the story that what Skylar went through. So I'll go ahead and say I don't think this is necessarily a full disclosure, but I am trans. A trans guy, and you know, all of our experiences are obviously different. And so, you know, when Tan was saying things like, I didn't know what it was like to be trans, and I don't know anything about the trans community, and going on, and that's fine, and he probably still doesn't, because my experience is 100% different from Skylar's.
Right.
But having said that, it's like to have the, and for me to hear things like that, I'm like, well, but I just walked through life doing my thing, but I have extreme privilege because I live in the Bay Area. I'm read as male. I had to go through the name change thing, but I didn't have that experience because it was at Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally feel for Skylar, having been abandoned by his parents, but having that community of friends around to support him. And then having these five guys come in and totally accept him and see him as a man for who he is. And then just kind of saying out loud, yeah, I just want to change my goddamn driver's license, which is it's a wonderful thing to get that in the mail. So that was, I think that was, but it was really intense though. It was filming him waking up from surgery.
Yeah.
That was intense. And then he looked, I'm like, he's not going to remember that. I didn't see anything until a week after my surgery, but to have, and then to see the five guys react to that was also really cool. Cause that now they're seeing how, and they even stated as much, how important that is to a trans person to have that kind of a gender affirming, surgery, and seeing how much it meant to Skylar when he looked down and just like started crying right there on the table. So.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind either of you nominating me for queerness.
I told Maria, I was like, I wish they could take like 30-year-old lesbians, and she was like, who are you talking about? And I was like, me, girl. Are you kidding me? Like, we should all just nominate ourselves, honestly.
I think the main constraint right now is just that these two seasons have been focused, they've been limited to Georgia. And so we got to wait for them to come to New York and the Bay Area.
I don't know if they're going to come to New York and the Bay Area.
That does not seem like the obvious choice.
I know. Well, you know what? Actually, let me take that back. California and New York get a lot already.
Yeah.
We have a lot already. Right. So let's get into the state.
Well, and I think like exactly what you were saying before, like there's this mutuality to these episodes, right? Like it's not just about the transformation of this one person. It's about the whole group of them, all six of them, the Fab Five and their client learning something. You know, and each of them goes through a little baby transformation in every single episode. And that is what makes it so special. And I think in a setting like Georgia, like there are a lot of really great open-minded people in Georgia and all over the world, right? But I think a lot of us think of a place like Georgia or in the South as like very bigoted and old school and traditional and conservative. And watching that play out in that setting is so, it's not just powerful to watch and entertaining to watch, but it's like valuable in our mental scope and our perspective of things. And I think they're probably going to continue to do stuff like that, people who live in these areas, that they're going to continue to challenge the stereotype and challenge the perception, you know,
which I appreciate. Did they renew this by chance? Because they've already renewed Handmaid's Tale.
It's impossible that they haven't. It's like, I mean, it might not be signed yet, but and like barring some sort of situation with one of the Fab Five, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now, and it says they are filming they're filming an episode of season 3 in Australia in the town of Yaz. Or yeah.
Oh, shit.
Going to Yaz.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try to say it, but yeah, correct.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, I did want to go back to, you know, like talking about, you know, how they're opening the show up to more representation. And I think one of the things that's nice about that, but also, you know, is that, you know, because Skylar is the only trans person on the new show, and because they specifically focus on this moment immediately post surgery, you know, obviously there's a big focus on his trans identity, on like the surgery itself. And I think like that is, you know, leads to this very powerful episode. And, you know, for Tan in particular to sort of have this experience of like figuring stuff out that also, you know, frankly, that I as a person, like, you know, as a cis man also had to like kind of figure out. And so like I think it's great to have an episode that really with a trans character where it's really all about that. But hopefully as the show continues, there can be, as you were saying, Henry, many different kinds of trans experiences, because there's also this weight when you're the first one that there's almost this feeling of, well, this is the trans person. They're going to
like
represent the trans experience.
We checked it off the box. Yeah. Yeah. We did that. We're good.
Yeah. And it's like, and I did feel a little uncomfortable, but not in any bad, like, not in any bad way. It's just, but it was fine, right? As a whole, it was fine and good. Because, as we all know, and people should go Google this stuff if they want to know, don't go up to a trans person and ask them, but, you know, not every trans person has surgery. Not every trans person identifies as either male or female. There's gender non-binary, and I mean, that's getting too in the weeds probably for Netflix at this point, but, and so I suspect that perhaps maybe this episode could have turned some people off because I'm not saying me, but another person might, I can't afford surgery. That guy's so lucky he just got surgery. I wish I could, or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
And because it does tell people who, and again, I'm going to sound like an idiot right now, but I forget that, I'm lucky enough to sometimes forget that I'm trans, and by lucky, I mean, I'm not a target.
Yeah.
Every day. And that's another reason why I'm so privileged. And I accept that privilege. I have that privilege. It's called passing privilege, I guess. I don't like to use the term passing, but So yeah, but I also had beard envy of Skylar, right? And so then when they went to shave his beard, I was like, no. But yeah, I mean,
Anthony, yeah, right. I was really worried actually when Jonathan was like, "We're getting rid of the beard," and I was like, "Don't do it to him," you know, likes his beard, leave
it, trim it. But you know, it's true, and I don't know if they're gonna make enough space for it or time. I hope they would. Because trans men are men. And if they identify as such and that gender, and they are different aspects. I mean, I wish I could get an apartment makeover, and I'm a trans guy who needs an apartment makeover. You know what I mean? So let's focus on that and maybe some better fitting suits.
Yeah, right. The suit made me jealous. As a as a fairly androgynous lesbian, I fucking love a nice suit, and my body just doesn't work in suits, and I was really jealous of the suit. I was like, I would rock that so hard.
I like it when he put his collar outside of the
jacket. Oh, it hurt a little bit.
That's my favorite part when they're watching.
Oh yeah,
at the end.
It's nice.
I love that part.
You'd like the first season, because some of the watching parts in the first season are like super fun and just sweet.
Awesome.
I will say though that like I feel like Queer Eye on Netflix is like, in content wise, it's nothing like it, but it's like it's a bridge builder the same way that Sex and the City was. Like a lot of conservative people who might not watch something like that, like found it was like, it's like softcore almost, you know what I mean? To give them a window into something that they might not have been interested in and do it in a fun way that makes them feel something. And I think that the trans episode, for better or worse, was like a piece of that, you know, like it might not resonate as much with other trans men and women, or, you know, that it could have, right? By not showing like all of the experiences, and hopefully they do more of that. But I think for these like these people who are, you know, really conservative and kind of been thinking the same way for a long time, to watch it play out and to hear even like little things like trying to get a suit tailored and being, you know, that's a dangerous situation for me, is the words that Skylar used, you know, like, to just recognize that and try to relate to it a minute. And how would you feel, you know, is like that's an important thing that's happening, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I, in fact, I said I watched an episode last night, and then this morning I was like, I'm going to wait for Skylar's episode for the morning, because I want to be awake. Like, I was looking forward to it, and I watched it with glee and attention, and I might have teared up a couple of times. And I did identify with some of it, with more than some of it. And I think that, yeah, to your point, Jordan, it is a bridge, and I hope that people watch it. I hope that people watch this episode, because another thing that was really awesome about it was Skylar's sensitivity,
yeah,
and his vulnerability. And he was fearless when he talked about being, sometimes he plays with gender.
Yeah.
He's trans man, but he does play with gender. And when that YouTube star showed up at the end. So like all of that is made that episode what it was, and it wasn't just him being trans. And it was the relationships that he created with these Fab Five. So yeah, I think, and you're right, like I wanna not take away from the significance of that. The fact that he was on a trans guy in Georgia too, because it is significant. And the fact that they watched the surgery. I mean, that never would have fucking happened. Not even 2 years ago.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a big
step. That's intense. And I just hope everybody out there can get what they want in their lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the comparison to Sex and the City is interesting too, because like certainly I've talked to a lot of people who saw Sex and the City when it was first coming out, and like this idea that it was such a breakthrough at the time, and that, you know, 20 years later it can be kind of hard to see that, and that like there's lots of things to criticize about it, certainly in terms of like people talk about it as like this, the consumerism, the sort of like, you know, that it's a very white show, and like it's none of, and it's like it's important to acknowledge limitations, but it's also important to acknowledge what a breakthrough it was. And I think both of those things can be true, and I think that's true of like Queer Eye too, to say, listen, I think there's the first show, especially, you know, the show in the 2000s, was very criticized for being kind of consumerist. Fair enough. And I think there's a little bit of that criticism of this one, too. And I don't think those are unfounded criticisms, but at the same time, it's also doing these really amazing things.
Yeah, good point. I should say here that I have not seen Sex and the City.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't bother now. I mean, it's just, it was important because it had all these, like, I think that it was this thing that had all of these, like, older kind of women, housewives, like, understanding that they can be fabulous and they can, you know, and appreciate their own sexuality and they can, you know, live their best life, you know, and a lot of encouragement there for a demographic that maybe didn't have that before. And it's the same for this. Like it's about seeing a different lifestyle maybe, or about, you know, just understanding your own value. And there's a lot that you can get from that, not to mention just your perspective opening up, seeing people who you wouldn't expect to treat each other with love and kindness do that is like a really powerful thing. But yeah, I wish that they would add like a financial planner or something.
Oh yeah.
I feel like that would be really valuable because a lot, like what you were saying, Anthony, about like the consumerism, like, okay, well, can these people necessarily afford to get the product that Jonathan recommends and continue buying clothes like Tan recommends? And, you know, I guess they pay for the whole house being redone, but if you wanted to change things or whatever, or pay for the food that Anthony wants them to eat, you know, like, can you keep that up? And I think it would be interesting to get some financial planning advice in there. It wouldn't be as sexy or fun. It's hard to show on camera a financial makeover, but it's actually like useful.
Yeah, no, I agree. That would be, it'd be great if they could find some way to do that. I understand why they don't, and why also talking about that stuff is both less you know, doesn't necessarily make for great television, and also people may just not be as comfortable, you know, putting a number on certain things. But it'd be nice to see, and you know, I think what we talked about when we were talking about season one is it seems like they are trying to point them towards stuff that isn't just like crazy expensive, but is like, this is a place where you could shop and you could actually find affordable clothes that work for you and things like that. But I think the financial side could actually be dug into more, and it would still be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
One last thing I wanted to say was like, just that, like, one of the things I think when you watch reality TV, right, is there's always this question of like, how much of the real person are you seeing? And obviously, like, it is a performance, you're on camera, but I do think the show, and especially in the second season, it does a good job of like highlighting smaller moments that aren't like the big dramatic moment when you would expect someone to say, I'm on camera, I have to be emotional now, I have to say this is means a lot to me, but also smaller stuff like, I mean, it turned into a bigger thing when like Bobby wouldn't go into the church, right? And that seemed like a very small thing. But then, and or just like moments when I think one of the Fab Five is very like physically affectionate with one of the other ones, or one of the persons they're helping in a way that doesn't feel like, hey, I'm being fabulous and supportive. It's just like, hey, you're having a rough moment right now, and I just want to, like, as a, you know, and it makes me feel more like we're getting glimpses of who they really are, and it's not just purely a performance.
I agree. Even down to like little facial expressions, like, you know, it would be really easy to edit in certain facial expressions or reactions into certain scenarios, but it doesn't feel that way at all. It feels like really genuine, and it does give you like this window into who both the Fab Five are and who the clients, I guess, are. We need a name for those people. The fixer uppers.
Those people.
That's what Tan always says, so I'm just following his lead. But yeah, another job well done from Netflix and the Queer Eye Squad, because I laughed and cried in every episode I've seen so far. And that is the marker. I mean, me and Maria sit and watch it, and just we both look at each other smiling with tears running from our eyes because it's just so sweet. So keep up the good work, old Netflix.
Thanks, Netflix.
Thanks, Netflix.
Yeah, and thanks everyone for listening. Thank you, Henry, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Hank. It's been fun. Sure.
And everyone, go, if you haven't, I'm sure you have already, but if you haven't, listen to Control T. Also, if you feel like it, subscribe to original content on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And thanks again.
Smash that like button. Really helps out the channel. Just kidding. It's from gaming. All right. Bye-bye.